Hello and welcome to the Stop Devaluation Podcast. I'm your host and founder of the Stop Devaluation Movement, Melody Hilton. The heart of this movement is to see the value in all of humanity and live courageous lifestyles of using our power for good instead of harm. We can affect change by choosing validation over judgment, and I hope you'll take your place and make a positive impact in this world. Heart breaks for those who have been marginalized and stereotyped because of where they live, their race, or their economic status. Everyone has a story that pressures them to think in a specific way as they falsely label themselves because of their environment or the attitudes and actions of others. Andrea Henson shares the identity battle she faced living with prejudice from two very different worlds. She learned to show up differently, trying to fit in until an educator saw and affirmed her potential. This powerful story is filled with so many poignant stories of those treated as insignificant, but also bringing them into a validating community. Welcome, everyone, to the Stop Devaluation My Story interview. And today, I am so honored to invite Andrea to be a part of this interview and share her story. Welcome, Andrea.
Thank you. Thank you, Melody. How are you?
I am doing awesome, and I am just so blessed that you are on this interview with me because I know that you carry a heart to stop devaluation, and I know that you desire to bring validation to so many individuals. But let's first start with your story.
Yeah. Melody, I grew up in Southeast D.C., Washington, D.C., and I think it's important to understand with my story that both of my parents grew up in the South, mm-hmm. and they grew up in a time period where there was a lot of discrimination. Both of them faced discrimination. Both of them faced a lot of places where they were devalued, both from people and just from, and I say systematic, meaning the society at that time didn't value them as African Americans.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times what happened is as we grew up, our parents really kind of constantly instilled in us that there was just always a difference, that there was just always a different expectation. And though their hearts were in the right place to help prepare us, there always is that seed of why is there a difference? Why do I have to do more? Why can't I just be myself? And is there something wrong with me that I can't just be who I am? And so that kind of further perpetuated itself when I went to school. So my mother very much was understood coming out of the South that education was the key. And my father, who was a product of the DC public school system, knew, you know, that there were some great schools and some schools that they just didn't do well. So they purposely made decisions to sacrifice so that we can go to private school.
Wow.
So my brother and I enrolled in private school at that time. And I'm not sure if you know DC, but the school we enrolled in was Capitol Hill Day School, which was in a very much more affluent area of the city. And that's not where we live, not at all. And so when we went to the school, we were bused. So a bus would come and pick us up, a big yellow school bus. And at that time, that was very rare because if you were a DC student, you went to your neighborhood school. So there was really no busing. You just walked to your neighborhood school. So we had this big yellow school bus coming down our street in Southeast DC, which at that time was not the best part of the city. And we would get on it every day, my brother and I, and we would go all the way across town to a private school in which at that time there were only 4 African-American students in the entire school.
Wow.
Yeah, my brother and I and then 2 other students. They were siblings as well. And what I quickly understood and realized was that those two worlds, meaning my school and my neighborhood, did not mix. Like they could not mix. They could not integrate. And so it's funny because even to this day, it still exists. My family calls me Angie. Mm. No one in my family knew for a long time that my name was Andrea. They all just called me Angie. And so it's funny because my first day of school, and this is in pre-K, and the teacher's like, Andrea, Andrea. And I don't even raise my hand because I didn't even know my name was Andrea. I thought my name was Angie because that's what I was called ever since I can remember. So when the teacher was like, you're Andrea, and I was like, no, I'm not. Just, you are. I broke down in tears. And then my mother, you know, explained to me, yes, you're Andrea. That's your birth name. Blah, blah, blah. We call you Angie. This is your nickname. So what that did for me is made me really, you know, and I don't know, at a young age, just having an awareness or just because of my parents, I realized that Andrea went to this school and Andrea had a different persona, a different way she talked, a different way she interacted. And then Angie lived in Southeast DC.
Wow.
And the challenge with that was neither person was accepted in the other environment. So you kind of grow up not feeling completely you, like who, you know, I'm these two different people. I go to a white school. I'm educated. I speak a different way. And then when I come home, I can't bring that persona home because then I'm going to get picked on, bullied. I'm going to have to keep fighting because people are going to call me names.
So you had pressure from both worlds.
We had pressure from both worlds because at school, I was always conscious of, oh, don't use that slang. Don't say ain't. Don't say I got. You know, like it was constant pressure of not wanting to make sure I brought the wrong persona into the wrong world. And then just not feeling comfortable with who me I was because I wasn't accepted, fully accepted. I was always ridiculed either way. So I was either ridiculed because I lived in Southeast or I was ridiculed because I went to a white school.
Wow.
And so the good thing was my parents were there to help balance that. They were there to help us bring awareness to this is because it didn't become a thing of this is because it's people's fault. This is how people were raised. Mm. So it helped us to understand that though those words hurt and people, you know, those things hurt our feelings and they hurt me as a person, that I did not necessarily blame the person. It really did become blame the system. So my dad was definitely, it's the system. So that is where that came in. And so what it came for me was that we were growing up in a system or in a society that did not value a certain segment of people. And that became a really like a core kind of passion for me, even as I got older, that ignorance is just what it is. It's ignorance. It's that people are just unaware. They just don't know. And because they grew up in their sheltered area or their little corner or their world, they never looked out into someone else's to be able to try to understand or really develop empathy or really try to, you know, recognize just because I don't look like you, just because I don't live where you live or because I don't talk like you doesn't mean I'm not important.
Exactly.
Or, and so I mean, the pivotal point came for me where it was just really evident that it wasn't so much for me a black and white thing. It became ignorance and a systematic place of ignorance is when I was in college. And so when I went to college, I was among a group of friends. And then there were some other teenagers from D.C. and some other students from D.C. as well. And so when they came up and we were all sitting in the circle and they said, oh, where are you from? And they were asking each other, what part of D.C. are you from? Where did you go to school? Where did you grow up? And so I said, well, I grew up in Southeast D.C. And so immediately half of the room was like, Southeast?
Wow.
You grew up, what are you doing here? Aren't you supposed to have a couple of kids? And so just the stigma of, because I grew up in this neighborhood, I'm not supposed to be educated, or I'm supposed to be a statistic, or I'm supposed to be a teenage mom, or I'm supposed to be strung out on drugs. That didn't come from another race. That came from my own.
Yeah.
And so it just gave me realization that it's just it's an ignorance, because you grew up in a different side of the city. You grew up in a more affluent area of the city. So you assume that anyone who grew up in an area of poverty must meet these criteria or must not have this kind of value, or you just don't value them as people. And so it really did, I guess it angered me. I mean, I was really hurt and angered. I experienced that from people of different races, but not from my own. And that was the first time. And I just said, wow, God, you know, I can't, how do you deal with that? How do you begin to help educate? And so I had one of our directors there who ran the dorm. They were called a resident director. And he sat down and talked to me for a while, which really helped me kind of just understand that people, you know, because of their own insecurities, because of whatever they've gone through, because of their own things that they do, the way they help validate themselves is to constantly try to put someone else down.
Yep.
I make myself feel better by looking at other people and saying they're worse than I am. And I think that was the key. And I just kept saying, you know, but we should never have to put another down to feel good about ourselves.
Most definitely.
That should just be right. That should just be independent. But what I understand is that if you grow up in a place where that's just not around you, or that's not something that's poured into you, or for me, that's not physically what it looks like, then that is where you have that challenge. And so it really did take a long time for me to, as I say, blend Angie and Andrea and to make a conscious decision of who I was and be comfortable with who I was. And if even within my own family, Melody, where I would get, oh, that's right, because I was the first one to go to college. She went to college. Oh, she's educated. Oh, she talks white. She does this. And it just got to the point where I didn't even want to sometimes go around my family, because it was just that I always got kind of ridiculed, or, you know, as they called, they joking with me. But it hurt. It hurt because I still wasn't comfortable within myself. So anything that anyone said just kind of added to that discomfort.
It almost sounds like damned if you do and damned if you don't, that no matter where you went, you know, you had to work so hard to look at the environment to say, what should I do? How should I talk? How should I respond? And it really didn't always have to do with race. It just had to do with being different and the stereotypes.
Right. And at the end of the day, what happened was it made me second guess everything.
Wow.
Because I just was not confident. I was always looking for someone to reassure, am I doing okay in this environment? Am I doing okay over here? Am I doing okay over here? Because I grew up with the thought, I can't be who I really am in any of these places.
So other than that one educator, were there any individuals that just looked at you and valued you and spoke into your life and invested into your life, into your potential, your value, your worth, just as being who you are?
Yeah, I think that came, and it was pivotal. It was in middle school. And it was another educator. And it was time for me to make a decision what high school I wanted to go to. And I wanted to go to the high school in my neighborhood because I just wanted to be comfortable and fit in. I don't know how to, I just wanted to be comfortable and fit in. And she spoke to my potential and said, but you're a great writer. Look at how well you write. You're doing excellent. Don't settle and be comfortable. you can do well and push me to apply to the all academic high school at that time in DC. And I was scared. I just did not feel like I had the confidence, but she was like, you can do it. You can do it. And she just always encouraged me and always just spoke to what I could be and what I could do. And really pushed me out of feeling like I needed to settle and be accepted. If that makes sense.
Yes, it sure does.
It broke the kind of the mindset of I needed other people's approval to be comfortable in who I am. And so she really did was instrumental in pushing me. And then, I mean, pushing me into the high school and I went to the academic high school. And even there, you still have the dichotomy of, oh, these kids are from this area of town, these kids. But I think that's every high school. But it did give me a little bit more kind of esteem. And so she really did pour into me to do that. And then I would think later, it was pretty much after college and now I'm working. And I have a really great friend, and her name is Lisa. And that was when I began to, in my mind, merge the Angie and Andrea. Mm. And I made a conscious decision when I graduated college that I was never going to introduce myself as Angie again.
Mm.
And that I was going to be Andrea and this is who I am. Mm. And it was really pivotal that when I met her and I started off and we were working part-time and doing some training together, that she just constantly said, wow, she just always spoke into my abilities, what I could do, just spoke into the kind of person that I was. And that really just helped to affirm, this is Andrea. Andrea is a friendly person. She's compassionate. She loves deeply. She's intelligent. She is well-read. She can write. And Andrea also can lay back and goof off and talk slang and, you know, and joke around. And it's okay if I could do that all in one setting. And yeah. So it really just freed me to really start being who I was. And I think it became really important in our conversations because she grew up in a similar situation of, you know, how much, you know, we may have passed, let opportunities pass and let things pass because we weren't confident in ourselves. We weren't comfortable in ourselves. Mm-hmm. That we didn't want that for other people.
We
didn't want young people growing up. I didn't want young people growing up in the city to feel like they had to be someone different when they go across town to school. I wanted them to know that who you are is perfect regardless of what environment you're in. And you don't have to put on airs to impress anyone. Be who you are.
Yes.
And that's okay.
Yes.
And so I started really on a path to, I was working with little kids at that time, but my heart was really pulling me to start working with young teenagers. And so I accepted a job and actually as a trainer at this organization and started working with young inner city kids. And these kids were kids who were 16 to 24 year olds. They were adjudicated. They were coming out of either detention centers or correctional centers, or either they had been kicked out of school or aged out and they couldn't go back to school. So these kids were making a decision to say, I want to do something with my life. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to come back and get my GED. And it was the best 15 years of my life. I wouldn't trade it for the world. And what it did was, and it was purposeful. It was purposeful because I said, I don't want to work anywhere else but in D.C. I don't, because I knew of the strong, not only just the stigma of Southeast, but just the systematic kind of, you go to a school in the Southeast D.C. area and that school may, you know, have holes in the walls. It may not be well kept. And we're telling our kids, value education, value importance.
That's
but
profound
we don't value,
right there. That is really
it.
Profound.
But we don't value them enough to give them the best facilities to do that in.
Wow.
And then you go across town and you have the opposite because it's a more affluent area where they have a better facilities. They have state-of-the-art labs. They have actual books. And so these kids understand that. They know that I saw that. I saw that growing up, that my friends went to schools that I came home with a backpack full of books and they came home with absolutely nothing.
Wow.
And so I saw that there was a difference even growing up. And I said, you know, I just wanted to be that person to encourage those young mm-hmm. people and to, in some way, help level that playing field the best way I could. And so it was really important when I took the job to really get to know these students and really get to know, and I call them my kids, so you're going to hear that quite often. Know my kids, because I wanted them to understand they were important.
Yes.
And they were valued. And so I had, it was always my personal goal within the first week of school, if I could do it by the first 2 days, was to memorize everyone's name.
Wow.
So I could greet them by name. Because what's more valuable than someone being able to say, look you in the eye when you walk in the door in the morning and say, good morning, Michael, or good morning, Samantha, or good morning, you know, Nakia. That was important to me because I felt like that showed value, that I recognized them, I honored them, I wanted them to know it was important to be here. And I think the other piece was really working with not only the staff, but working with just people in general to help them understand that our kids are coming from different places and different experiences that we aren't even aware of.
We
have no clue. We don't know what goes on in their home when they wake up in the morning.
Yep.
We don't know if they got yelled at, if they were abused. We don't know if they had anything to eat. We don't know if they even had money.
Mm.
But what we did know is they went through whatever they had to go through to get to us.
Mm.
So the least we can do is make them feel like they're important while they're with us, right? And so it was important to make sure the building was clean, that they had things there, that if they didn't have a pencil was provided and they weren't yelled at for not having a pencil, that we talked to them and greeted them as they walked through the door. And we didn't ignore them. We honored them. And that was, it was extremely, extremely important. And what grew as a little small school and still is, our enrollment doubled within 5 years.
Wow.
And it doubled because, number one, our young people really felt they belong. And when they came in the building, it was a practice that I did every year because I felt like this was extremely important. And what I did is every year I would take the previous year's kind of code of conduct, rule book, kind of this is our class norms, and tear it up. And I was like, this is a new group. This is a new class. This is your school. This is the time where you will decide how we as a community in this building are going to operate.
Wow.
It was so important for them to have a voice because a lot of times they have no voice anywhere else. And so I wanted them to know that if you took the effort to do everything you needed to do to get in, and it was not an easy school to get into, that then we're going to take every effort to make sure you feel like this is where you belong and you feel a part of this and you feel like you have something to invest. So it was really important to kind of set that up. It was also important for us to understand and take into account all that our students was going through in terms of having a heart for them. I remember, and this was kind of, you know, a pivotal point in my career, my first year there, each of us had mentees. And so those were students that we would kind of, if they had extra questions, if they needed help or needed support. And one of my mentees, he lived in Southeast DC and he was late to school every day. And I was like, why are you late every day? What's going on? And he said, 'cause I take three buses. And I was like, well, why don't you take the subway? And he was like, I don't really know how to take the subway.
Aww.
So that one morning I got up and we decided to meet and I drove to his home. I got him up in early in the morning. I met his mom. We walked to the subway, him and I, got on the subway, went to the transfer point so that he could understand and then came to school. And so he could see that it took less than 30 minutes on the subway. We were taking him over an hour on the bus.
Wow.
And so it was so eye-opening that, you know, for him, it was the great thing of, you know, someone coming to take him to the school. But it was just eye-opening that our kids, you know, we assume they do things without ever understanding the real reason. And then we make judgment, and our actions then line up with our own beliefs or our own assumptions instead of really talking to our students and being able to understand what is the real reason. And then the struggle with why they don't feel valued is because we automatically assume things right. based on yep. where they live, who they are, yep. what they look like, instead of being asking. So I could have said, oh, you just don't want to be on time. You just want to. But he literally did not know a better route. So the sad part of that is, in that same school year, that was my mentee. He was murdered about 3 months later.
Oh, my goodness.
He was murdered going to McDonald's. And that just, I mean, I remember, like, that made me say, I don't want another one whose life is cut short. I don't want another student who is making major efforts to improve their life, to do something positive, not be able to get out of their neighborhoods or get out of the environment that they're in or get out because we make all of these assumptions and not really look at the person. And so it became really, really important to me to create and to develop a school that opened its arms and opened the door and opened its heart to young people to help them be the best that they could be, to give them second, third, and fourth chances, because no one's perfect. Yeah. And we all need that yeah. additional support. We all need sometimes a redo, or as I call it, a do-over. Yeah. We all need that opportunity. And for the most part, these young people, you know, I never sit there and blame young people for what happens to them, because they are children.
Mm-hmm.
It's what happens to them. And I never wanted anyone else to come out of that place feeling like, I'm not worthy. I shouldn't be able to get a high school diploma. I don't deserve to be able to do this because of mistakes I've made. No, the mistakes you made were mistakes. Some things weren't even done that you did. Some things were done to you. The reality is, everybody is worthy of an opportunity
yes.
to do and improve and be whoever they want to be. And that's what my goal was, is to, regardless of your situation, regardless of your past, when you make a decision that I want to move forward, provide that opportunity and provide that place where they can do that, where they're safe, where they're emotionally secure, where they feel comfortable. And trust me, we had students from all over the city. Some of our students were in opposite gangs, mm-hmm. but we made it really clear here, this is our community. So when we're in here, we're in a bubble. Whatever else goes on outside is outside. When you come in here, this is a different community. When you go back outside, we understand. But in here, it became a safe place. And we really worked hard to create a place where people felt like they were valued. And it was amazing that kids and young people would come back. And so, now, we have students who started with us at 16 years old. And they would come back year after year after year. And I was just surprised. We had students who would graduate, and we would say, see you, and they would still come back next year just to hang out and to come Aww. Because they felt valued. And I remember one student said, I like coming here because no one else listens to me. and so we wanted to be that place. And we had students who really came from very, very difficult places. We had students who, and I remember one, and this student still, you know, is on my, you know, just my heart. And when I met him, you know, our school required the students didn't do drugs, and he really had a hard time stopping smoking marijuana. And I used to talk to him, and we would walk around the building. I was like, well, what is the real issue? And he would just say, if I'm not high, I will go crazy. And I was like, well, what do you mean? He was like, you don't understand. My mother sold me for crack at 6 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
So all the things that he went through, and he said, if I'm not high, I would go crazy. And I don't even know what this, in that moment, I knew he was telling the truth. I mean, I knew. I mean, I just, you know how you just, you know, I can't turn this one away.
Yeah.
I can't just let him go back to the street. I got to show him that, you know, he's important. We just didn't know how. We just didn't know what to do. So we really did work with him. And we created a contract. And we just said, if you're going to stay here, then we mandated substance abuse counseling. And we paid for substance abuse counseling because we value our kids. We wanted them to succeed. It was nothing too much to invest. And so we paid for substance abuse counseling. We got him the counseling that he needed so that he could stay in the school. But those are the kids that were coming to us. And those were the kids that we wanted and that in my heart was saying, God, they need to know that they're valued. They need to know that they are worth it. They need to know that we have not thrown them away, that we're not saying, oh, you can't come back here. You can't come get an education. Nope, you're not going to be able to get a job. We our whole intent and our whole purpose was to take those young people and help them see beyond a shadow of doubt how important they were to themselves, how important they are to the society. And it was the best experience I've ever had.
Yeah. Andrea, you truly are one that embodies the Stop Devaluation movement. And no one can tell me that there isn't hope for a generation, for our nation, for individual lives when there's people like you who are truly value generators, who live out of valuing the intrinsic worth of every person, no matter what they've done, because you're willing to take time to understand, hear their story, and actually pay a price to make an investment into them so that they can see their worth. Just like you had individuals who saw your value, you became that value generator. I am just so honored to have you share all these things today because every one of us can have this heart in our sphere of influence. We might not be in inner city DC, but wherever we are at, we can model and live the things that you've just talked about. Now, before we close, Andrea, is there anything that you would just like to say to the audience that it's like, okay, before I go, I just must say this?
Yeah, I just want to share two things if I can.
Sure.
The first is, so in all of this, it became really relevant and became really personal. And not that it wasn't personal when I was out there working with all these kids, when my son was experiencing the same thing in his school. And what happened is my son is special needs and there was a teacher and he was in a private school and the school really didn't have the support to do what they needed to do. And unfortunately, he became a scapegoat of bullying and accusation. Mm-hmm. And it got to the point where I remember picking him up from school one day and I said, honey, we have to go. He just burst out crying, was like, I didn't do it. I didn't do what they said. And it just got to that point where he was kind of labeled as this problem. And even the teacher was saying, yes, the other kids blame him. And I know he didn't do it, but they just kind of allowed it. And so it became a conscious decision to walk away from that career to come home and homeschool my son. So now we're here and I'm homeschooling my son. And I'm not saying that because I'm doing anything great. I'm saying it because I'm doing what a mother should do. And that, so as I'm talking, this is just really resonating and even being introspective to say, okay, homeschool mom, are you instilling, those values and how to continue to help support him mm-hmm. and to validate him so that as he goes older, he goes out into the world, he becomes a tool of validation for others yes. and not necessarily, the opposite. And so this became really personal. It became really real within the last year. And so, I think it made me have a different lens. It made me angry. I was angry before, but this was a different kind of, I would say angry because I didn't like what the system was doing, but this was almost personal. And it was like, you're attacking my baby.
Yeah.
And so it became a different kind of thing and a different kind of fight. So what I want to leave and I want to say is that we always know and we say, children are our future and they're our most precious commodity. And it's easy to say that and kind of sometimes be flippant because it's not personal. It becomes kind of like this cliche, this thing that we say. But I really want to impress upon the people that it is personal.
Yes.
And we should get mad about it. And we should take it personal, even if it's not of your own blood-born child, but just because these young people and people in society,
yes.
we take care of each other.
Yes.
At the end of the day, we take care of each other. And so it may not be that I know that young man down the street, or I may not know that young lady on the other side of town, but the reality is that in some way or some fashion, that's my future. They're yes. going to be taking care of me. They're going to be running things. They may be the next future president.
Yep.
And what do I want to instill in them?
Yep.
And how do I want them to see others?
Yes.
It's so important that I want to make sure that I'm valuing them so they learn to value other people. And so it just became really personal when it hit home that, you know what? It's not enough that we just say it. We have to start making change.
Yes.
We have to systematically come in and say, how are we creating systems from education across every other avenue and venue that constantly belittles, discredits, and ignores people.
Yeah.
And how do we begin to affect that in a way that people, regardless of color, race, creed, upbringing, environment, all have the same understanding that they're valued for who they are, period.
Every human being holds intrinsic worth, period.
That's right.
Oh, thank you so much. What an honor it has been to hear your heart. Truly, you are a value generator, and I honor you. Thank you.
This is awesome. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
I want to thank you for listening and encourage you to become a part of the Stop Devaluation movement. Be sure to like and follow #StopDevaluation on social media, subscribe to the YouTube channel, and visit StopDevaluation.com for more information and free resources. You can help spread the movement by sharing with others, leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, and most of all, by living a courageous lifestyle of using your power for good. Go out and value someone today. Your life matters, and you can make the world a better place. One word, one choice, one action of validation at a time.